All right, folks, here we go. Incendiary Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network. It is November 6th, 2022. Just wow. Wow. So I want to plug the chat room, the number 2incendiaryradio.chatango.com. You got incendiaryradio.chatango.com. And I want to plug Hooli's blog, W-H-O-O-L-I-S, blog.blogspot.com. He puts my archive up there every morning, commercial free. So welcome, everyone. So the sequence continues with black folks, prominent black folks, and the kosher mob. Now, Kyrie Irving, the famous basketball player who got real famous kind of in our circles due to the fact that he was adamantly opposed to taking the genetic sabotage injections. So now he is on the chopping block for posting a, you can just put it under the umbrella of the Black Hebrew Israelite theory or hypothesis. Okay, now I've covered this for years on the broadcast. You know, there's this whole underbelly that goes through the rap game, kind of entertainment with guys like Nick Cannon and so forth, that this whole melanin magic, kind of a blacks are divine, blacks are chosen type of underbelly that's been around since, you know, the beginnings of the Morris Science Temple of America, the Nation of Islam, and various offshoots, and then a lot of Egyptology mixed in there, House of Consciousness with a K. I've dug into this stuff for years, and it's gotten a foothold, as I've been talking about the last few weeks. And I'll tell you what, these Ashkenazis, these Khazars, don't like anyone. Look at the way that Israel Identity over on the white side of the house, Christian Identity folks, have been attacked for years. Okay, British Israel World Foundation, you know, the Stone of Scone, the Stone of Destiny, Jacob's Pillar Stone under the English throne where Queen Elizabeth sat for all these years, and the, you know, they call it the Leofale, the Paleo Hebrew kind of connections people make with the ancient Welsh language and Gaelic languages and so forth. And so the Europeans, you know, the tribe of Dan, the whole thing with the River Don, the Danube, Danzig, all this stuff. There's been plenty of Christian Identity preachers that I've followed for a long time, and they make some very, very interesting points. But so over here on the black side of the house, you have a similar thing that's been around for, you know, around 100 years, a little bit more, maybe, especially on the East Coast, okay, New York, Philadelphia, and so forth. You know, that now these groups rival or even are much bigger than the Islamic groups like the Moore Science Temple and Nation of Islam and some of the other ones. Some of the other ones were absorbed back into quote-unquote Orthodox Islam, what they call al-Islam, throughout the years. And so it's always been kind of one of my pet things to watch. And so this is somebody that's prominent like Kanye West and Kyrie Irving kind of putting this kind of lingo out here, and in Kyrie Irving's case, sharing a movie, okay, from one of these groups, from Hebrews to Negroes, and it was a 2018 documentary. But there's whole channels on YouTube you can dig around in if you're interested in kind of, let's say, you know, analyzing this method of thought, this hypothesis that, you know, what's fascinating is, you know, when you dig into the Bible and it talks about a peculiar people and people that can blush in the face when you get into this stuff and peculiar people. And it's like, look, when you look at the totality of the world population, blacks are not peculiar as far as their numbers. They're overwhelmingly, due to their birth rates, massively represented. Now, don't get me wrong, like some of these Ethiopians where you can tell how they have other bloodlines in them, especially the kind of the story about the Ark of the Covenant and so forth being moved there and being hidden there for all these years. Very, very interesting kind of path you can go down. But now there is some interesting parallels when you look at slavery here in the New World, predominantly run by elites, you know, Jewish elites. You know, even the Nation of Islam wrote The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews in a multi-volume set. Some of their authors over there documenting, pouring through a lot of these documents and the Jewish overwhelming nature of them being the movers and shakers behind a lot of this transatlantic slave trade. Now, don't get me wrong. These empires, the Portuguese and English and Spanish and so forth, they had their own thing going on. The Vatican is you know, tied into this heavily, the royal families. But the movers and shakers that these financiers, the money changer class that's been here for a long, long time, that he was even dealt with in the New Testament, you know, they've had their quote-unquote hooks in a lot of this business. And so I'm going to start right now. I was digging through this really interesting this interesting book by Dr. E. Michael Jones, who I've interviewed years ago, Jewish Revolutionary Spirit and Its Impact on World History. Well, I dug the book out, you know, and there's a few pages I want to read. And this kind of cocktails with Kanye West and his dust up, because he talks about this is our Holocaust. Okay, and he's talking about abortion, Planned Parenthood, and all that sort of stuff. Well, there's been plenty of white people that have fell victim to the abortion industry too. Kanye, these guys, LeBron and Kanye, they all constantly focus on the plight of blacks, and I get it. I mean, see, blacks are still, under this Jewish system, allowed to be very racialistic, as long as they don't point out anything, any shortcomings, let's just say, of the controllers, the Jewish mobsters. Now, see where Kyrie went over the line with the movie that he posted, because there are some, let's just say, parts of that movie that question the numbers put forth about the quote-unquote Holocaust, the Shoah, okay? And that's really what triggers the, you know, the heat mob about what he posted. But number two, they don't like the fact that this Hebrews and Negroes concept basically cuts them out of the picture as imposters, you see? And a lot of people talk about Revelation 2:9 and 3:9, the synagogue of Satan, the talking about Jews who say they are they're Jews but are not, but are the synagogue of Satan, and so forth and so on. And so that really starts to rub them the wrong way, this twofold kind of attack, saying, hey, look, this the Holocaust way overblown here, and et cetera, the whole gas chamber, mathematics just doesn't add up, and so forth. That's their new religion, and that's the bludgeon for the rest of the world, used, of course, to keep us all in line to where we can't question when they're shoving the knife in your back and destroying your society. See, they have to have this amulet, this trinket called the Holocaust, you see, and if that gets exposed as wildly fictitious, then a whole lot of other shoes will drop. And so that narrative has to be maintained at all costs now, because so much has been invested into this institutionalized victimhood status and so forth, that and they go through the whole pogroms and blah 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 blah, this internal victimhood status, because it could have never been, anytime anybody lashed out at this group of people, it couldn't have been due to their own malicious behavior in all of these societies that they've lived in throughout time. And in this book, Jewish Revolutionary Spirit and its Impact on World History, it just documents this a pretty decent chunk of the timeline about how whatever society these folks would be guests in or citizens in, they would use their organizational skills and craftiness and so forth to really grab power, and then through machinations treat the larger host nation like crap, plunder, destroy the moral order, and all those things. But this is chapter 28, and this is called Jews and Abortion. Okay. In 1967, Jewish gynecologist Bernard Nathanson was invited to a dinner party at which the ostensible topic was James Joyce. During that dinner party, Nathanson met another revolutionary Jew by the name of Lawrence Lader, L-A-D-E-R. Lader had been a protege and, some hinted, lover of Margaret Sanger, the recently deceased diva of the American eugenics movement. So you see, everybody talks about Margaret, and I'm going off the script here, but Margaret Sanger, this word, this blah, 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 blah. And then you've got already inklings of her having this Jewish lover. Kind of interesting, isn't it? Lader talked about Joyce, but Nathanson was soon fascinated to learn Lader had just written a book on abortion, a topic even more fascinating to Nathanson than novels by Irish apostates. Nathanson defines Lader politically rather than ethically. Lader became involved in radical politics in New York when he went to work for Representative Vito Marcantonio, a man who was rumored to have ties with the Communist Party, which was largely made up of New York Jews. Imagine that. Lader divorced his wife and became a freelance writer, a vocation financed by the money he inherited from his father, and became an agitator for the sexual politics of Margaret Sanger shortly after his return from World War II. From the moment he met Lader, Nathanson saw him as brewing up a revolution, and as a result felt a growing sense of excitement. Nathanson felt that he came by his own revolutionary fervor naturally. He hints at some Mandelian mechanism because he was a Jew. Revolution, according to Nathanson, was another word for chutzpah. I came by my rebelliousness honestly. As a physician, I doubt that this is a quality passed on by any reorganized Mandelian mechanism, but my father had it in abundance, except that in his generation and the community in which he was brought up, they called it chutzpah. Because Nathanson feels any author on abortion must submit a religious dissection, He tells of his schooling in New York City. He went to a fine private school with virtually 100% Jewish students, and he attended Hebrew school where he had developed an aversion to the Talmud. Religious instruction in that era meant endless slogging through turgid passages of Hebrew scripture, mindless memorization of Hebrew prayers for numerous occasions, and sanctimonious lectures about the chosenness of the Jewish race. Preoccupation with Zionism and fundraising left little energy for instruction in Hebrew or any demeaning excursions into the arcane regions of faith. Nathanson's experience in Hebrew school confirmed him in his aversion to the Talmud as a compendium of meaningless opinions which the rabbis enforced on Jews to maintain their control over him. So you see, even some truth comes out of a mass baby killer once in a while. In this, he was not unlike the revolutionary Jews in Russia during the Maskilic period from 1860 to 1880, when the German Enlightenment destroyed the Jews' allegiance to the Talmud and created the vacuum which was filled by Jewish conversion to messianic and revolutionary politics. Once religion had been discredited in Nathanson's eyes, he had no guide in life other than his own passions. While in medical school, Nathanson had an affair which led to a pregnancy, which he paid to have aborted. The mother of his child informed Nathanson afterward that she had haggled down his price to $350 before the procedure. I'm sorry for laughing, but haggling and Jews, I mean, you know, it's just crazy. She handed him the remaining $150 and disappeared from his life. The experience of procuring the abortion on his own child coarsened Nathanson, causing him to become cynical about what other people considered sacred. Marriage seemed ludicrous now, propelling him further along the road to revolutionary politics. Nathanson arrived at the revolution via sexuality, but also via the gynecological profession, which he felt predestined to adopt because of the influence of his gynecologist father. Gynecology puts revolutionary fervor in New York in the 60s meant abortion. After having murdered his own child, Nathanson was more disposed to act on his own natural Jewish inclination to revolution. He was also more likely to act on the promptings of other Jewish revolutionaries. I mean, think about it, what that does to your soul and your spirit. To willfully terminate your own progeny. Nathanson became a crusader for abortion at the time Wilhelm Reich's face and ideas made the cover of the New York Times Magazine. Before long, any OBGYN who refused to admit involvement in abortion was part of a loathsome little charade. Anger begat desire to change the laws to conform to his behavior. I suppose that in fury at my own impotence to aid my patients, and particularly in anger at the egregious inequity in the availability of abortions, the germination of an idea began, the need to change the laws. There seemed to be no time for the luxury of contemplating the theoretical morality of abortion or the soundness of freedom of choice. Something simply had to be done. Because Nathanson considered abortion a revolutionary act, and because he considered himself a revolutionary because of the fact that he was Jewish, he became, in his own words, an enlistee in the revolution. In this, Nathanson was influenced by the Jew from Hibbing, Minnesota, Bob Dylan, who had procured an abortion a few years earlier. He even makes use of his lyrics from a Bob Dylan song at one point. The times they were a change in describing 1967 as the revolution, Ari Annus Mirabilis, in which he joined with later to work for the total abolition of abortion restrictions. Think about this, and I'm going off script here, with the counterculture and everything else, and then you've got government actors involved with, you know, the scenes from the canyon and all that Dave McGowan stuff. But you had all these Jews, you know, pumping the abortion stuff, too. so I was as enthusiastic and cooperative a Confederate as one could wish for in a revolutionary movement as profound as this one. Larry and I and others were to devote hundreds of hours of our free time to the cause in this coming years. I was almost yearning to be radicalized in a cause. This was 1967. The country was being racked by the Vietnam convulsion, and challenges to authority seemed the order of the day, particularly in the intellectual breeding grounds of the Northeast. Though I was 40, I believed that I secretly longed to be part of the youth movement that was sweeping the country, demanding justice, pledging change, exalting love. So my indignation, my rebellious nature, and an undeniable urge to join the kids combined to move me into the public arena. The abortion movement was part of the sexual revolution. The abortion revolution was nonetheless unique. It coincided with the rise to cultural prominence of American Jewry in the wake of their breaking of the Hollywood production code and the Arab-Israeli Six-Day War, when it became the opinion of the WASP State Department elite that Israel was a strategic asset in the quest to secure oil in the Middle East. So think about that. The breaking of the Hollywood production code, that's when they had decency standards and all that stuff with... You had Catholics and Protestants that were really on Hollywood not to do anything crazy. And then, boom, in the Six-Day War. So then, right then, you had the USS Liberty going on. Very, very fascinating. The abortion movement took on the same configuration as the revolution in Europe when Philip II contested Elizabeth over religious hegemony during the Counter-Reformation. Like Elizabeth's campaign to drive the Spaniards from Holland, the campaign to overturn abortion laws in New York State was largely an alliance of Protestants and Jews at war with the Catholics. So think about that. Protestantism during this time had already been impregnated by the Rockefeller Council of Churches gang and all the rest of that, and liberalized, quote unquote. And so then it was this cabal of Protestants and Jews to overthrow the abortion standards and so forth. The list of groups attending a June 1970 meeting of the National Association for the Repeal of Abortion Laws, later NARAL, bears this out. NARAL always worked toward enlisting the Protestant and Jewish clergy to provide a moral counterforce to Catholics. Now, see, during this time, you have to realize the Second Vatican Council was just going on and getting finished up. And so this is when the penetration of the, let's just say, secular Jewish forces really screwed the entire Catholicism up. Okay, so I was born and grew up right when Catholicism was making the transition from the Latin Mass to the Novus Ordo, the New Order Mass is what they call it. And so this was really... It's just like 1913 when all the wicked things happened with the Federal Reserve, the founding of the ADL, the passage of the 17th Amendment, all that stuff. This time in the 60s was a real linchpin of transformation, okay? Let's see. NARAL always worked, blah, 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 blah. Karl Marx claimed the revolution would run by the vanguard of the proletariat, which he associated with the Communist Party. But former communists like David Horowitz felt Marx's real vanguard was the Jews, who had been involved in every revolutionary movement since the fall of the temple. Okay? Interesting. Although Protestants were involved, Jews were the vanguard in the abortion movement, as they were the vanguard of Bolshevism in Russia and of pornography in the United States. The movement to overturn abortion laws in New York was an essentially Jewish movement that saw itself as a revolutionary force against the darkness of Christianity in general and the Catholic Church in particular. Remember Al Goldstein from Screw Magazine? We do porn because Christ sucks and we hate Catholicism. Remember that? The movement was certainly not exclusively Jewish, but it could not have survived or succeeded without Jewish leadership. The abortion rights movement was a quintessentially Jewish revolutionary movement that mobilized the coalition of Jews and Judaizing Protestants that America inherited from the English anti-Catholic wars of the 16th century. Excuse me. The ethnic configuration of the abortion movement wasn't coincidental. The ethnically ambiguous later was to Lenin what Nathanson was to Trotsky. Together, they carried out a crusade against Catholics. Shortly after meeting, Nathanson later explained his strategy of legalizing abortion by attacking Catholics. The pro-abortion forces had to bring the Catholic hierarchy out where we can fight them. That's the real enemy, the biggest single obstacle to peace and decency through all history. Nathanson, then no friend of the church, was taken aback by the vehemence and cosmic scope of Later's attack. Later held forth on the theme through most of the drive home. It was a comprehensive and chilling indictment of the poisonous influence of Catholicism and secular affairs. From its inception until the day before yesterday, I was far from admirer of the church's role in the World Chronicle, but his insistent, uncompromising recitation brought to mind the protocols of the Elders of Zion. It passed through my mind that if one had substituted Jewish for Catholic, it would have been the most vicious anti-Semitic tirade imaginable. Later knew every revolution has to have its villain. Historically, those villains were Catholic, except in Russia, where the Tsar was Orthodox, the head of an official Christian country. It doesn't really matter whether it's a king, a dictator, or a czar, but it has to be someone, a person, to rebel against. It's easier for the people we want to persuade to perceive it this way. In America, Later told Nathanson, the villain would not be Catholics, who could be divided among liberal and conservative lines, but the Catholic hierarchy, which was a small enough group to come down on, and anonymous enough so that no names ever have to be mentioned, but everybody will have a fairly good idea whom we are talking about. The strategy shocked Nathanson initially, but it soon made good sense when the Nathanson remembered that was how Trotsky and his followers habitually referred to the Stalinists. When Later brought Betty Friedan into the NARAL, she brought with her the communist tactics she had learned from her youthful work with the party, making it seem that women, irrespective of ethnicity, supported abortion was a brilliant tactic that corresponded to the popular front three decades earlier and showed the abortion movement's revolutionary pedigree. And we're coming up on break, but I got it about another page and a half. The new popular front included Protestants and Jews with women as props in televised demonstrations, attacking doctors and hospitals targeted because they were Catholic. One early victim was Catholic OBGYN Hugh Barber. Nathanson chose him to target because he was a practicing Catholic who had stood adamantly against the widening psychiatric indications for action in his department. According to Nathanson, there has been no social change in American history as sweeping, as potent in American family life, or as heavily dependent upon an anti-religious bias for its success as the abortion movement. And there's the break. And so I'm going to stop there, and we just got a few paragraphs left, but pretty fascinating. You get down deep and you drill down like Dr. Jones did into this. Okay, we'll see you guys on the other side. People are risen, freeing out their blood. They tear it down, the bullet they killed. Time is out of war.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on Long-Term Food Storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
Standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science-analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews. cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the Republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the Republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. Fuck you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be a bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show. Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2, keep it today.
Public Broadcasting Network, and I'm going to finish this up real quick, and then we'll move on to some, and kind of tie this in with this fascinating time we're living in with this kind of a fork in the road with our relationship with organized Jewish mafia forces embedded within all of our countries, and you know where this is going to end up. So by the late 70s, Nathanson wrote Aborting America. He was heartily ashamed of the use of the anti-Catholic ploy. Nathanson implicated the Jews in this anti-Catholic ploy by calling it a shunda Fayyidin, scandal for the Jews, as if admitting the ethnic nature of the struggle. Nathanson converted to Catholicism a few years after converting to the pro-life position. The use of anti-Catholic bigotry to promote abortion was more than a reincarnation of McCarthyism at its worst. It was a keenly focused weapon, full of purpose and design. later divided Catholics into liberal and conservative factions, and then used the former to control and discredit the latter. And we're just seeing this war now. Pope Francis and the Jesuits and their war on tradition, orthodoxy within Catholicism, the Latin Mass, just pumping the tranny, gay stuff. I mean, just a total revolution going out through the Vatican to church now. The church is the real church is in eclipse right now at this point, as it was prophesied to be. The church shall be in eclipse, and it'll become the seed of the Antichrist. And then when you get into the protocols, they talk about having their own quote-unquote pope installed, their King Zion leader. So this is how these two entities are intertwined. But back to the reading here. So the modern Kennedy Catholics, who were already using contraception, could be browbeaten into a public pro-choice position without much effort. Then the stage was set for the use of anti-Catholicism as a political instrument and for the manipulation of Catholics themselves by splitting them and setting them against each other. Divide and conquer. They've done this. This Vatican II debacle was a divide and conquer. NARAL would simply press with fictitious polls and surveys designed to make it appear as if American Catholics were deserting the teaching of the church and dictates of their consciences in droves. The main public relations weapon, however, was identifying every anti-abortion figure according to his or her religious affiliation, usually Catholic, while studiously refraining from any ethnic or religious identification of those who were pro-abortion. Because they're all Jews, and some Protestant flunkies. Later's own religious beliefs were never discussed or mentioned, but he identified Malcolm Wilson, the lieutenant governor of New York State in 1970, as a Catholic strongly opposed to abortion. Neither I or Assemblyman Albert Blumenthal, wonder what his ethnicity was, Nathanson continued, was ever identified as a Jew, nor was Governor Nelson Rockefeller ever recognized as a Protestant. Even though the abortion movement was disproportionately Jewish, and from the very beginning of the abortion revolution, the Catholic Church and its spokesmen took a considerable role in its opposition. Given the media's liberal bias, it was easy to portray the church as an insensitive authoritarian warmonger in association with it or any of its causes as unendurably reactionary, fascistic, and ignorant. Nathanson thinks Catholics should have pointed out the religious bigotry at the heart of the double standard. They also should have explained that the pro-abortion side was overwhelmingly Jewish and therefore un-American because in the public mind, Protestant America is America. And had Protestant opposition been organized and vociferous early on, permissive abortion might have been perceived as somehow anti-American, the spawn of a cadre of wild-eyed Jewish radicals in New York City. Instead, there were no Catholic response to the blatantly anti-Catholic campaign. Catholics concentrated on explaining how the fetus was a human being, as if the other side was ignorant of this fact. There was no Catholic equivalent of the ADL, of B'nai B'rith, or the NAACP. The Catholic Church confined itself decently, though, as it turned out, disastrously, to the issue of abortion. By not identifying their ethnic opponents, Catholics lost the war. The media had no qualms in this regard and were willing to engage in a flagrant violation of the rules identifying crime by race, which they had just established. The mega press collaborated because they were controlled by pro-abortion Jews and Protestants who encouraged liberal Catholics like the New York Times' Anna Quindlen, eager to make it in competitive profession. The media, says Nathanson, directly ignored the carefully crafted bigotry we were peddling. Many media people were young college-educated liberal Catholics, just the kind we had succeeded in splitting off from the faithful flock, and they were not about to disgrace their newly won spurs as intelligentsia by embarrassing the liberals with anything as crass as an accusation of prejudice. Prejudice was something evil directed at Jews and blacks, not Catholics. But had our fulminations been anti-Semitic or anti-black, there would have been the most powerful keening in the media, strong enough to have destroyed NARAL. The NARAL strategy was based on chutzpah. For sheer chutzpah, it had to no modern parallel. Nathan calls the Robert Byrne affair the most nakedly bigoted, fecklessly anti-Catholic campaign NARAL ever mounted. Byrne, a Fordham University law professor characterized by the New York Times as a 40-year-old Roman Catholic bachelor, went before Justice Lester Holtzman to have himself declared the legal guardian of unborn children threatened with abortion. True to the ethnic double standard, the New York Times did not characterize Justin Holtzman as a married Jew. When Byrne sued for an injunction against abortions in New York's municipal hospitals, Attorney General Louis Lefkowitz vowed to fight Byrne, but nothing was said about Lefkowitz's ethnic religious status. When Nancy Stearns, a lawyer for the Center for Constitutional Rights, tried to have Byrne put up $40,000 bond for each woman forced to have a child, New York Times correspondent Jane Brody, whose ethnic identity remained shrouded in mystery, failed to describe Stearns as a single Jewess. Because the Times is the national paper of record, the double standard got repeated across the country. In Philadelphia, the Philadelphia Inquirer repeatedly referred to anti-abortion crusader Martin Mullen as an arch-conservative Roman Catholic, but never referred to Governor Milton Schaap, Mullen's opponent in Pennsylvania's abortion wars, as a pro-abortion Jew. Nathanson notes that Canada's Henry Morgenthaler used his stay in one of Hitler's concentration camps to justify his role as Canada's leading abortion provider. Morgenthaler's clinics violated Canadian law, and yet Morgenthaler is adored by the Canadian mega press, even though he is quite as devoted to malignant anti-Catholicism as our American exorcist Lawrence Lader. In 1967, about the same time that Bernard Nathanson met Lawrence Lader and NARAL was born, abortion became legal in California. Governor Ronald Reagan signed the nation's first abortion bill into law, but the law was written by Anthony Balinson, the Jewish representative from Beverly Hills. The ethnic dimensions of the abortion battle were, if anything, even more extreme in California than they were in New York. As in New York, the battle over abortion broke down clearly along ethnic lines. As in New York, Jews generally promoted abortion and Catholics generally opposed it. From the moment that abortion was legalized in 1967, the abortion battle in California was largely a battle between Catholics and Jews, in much the same way that Catholics and Jews had battled each other over obscenity in the California movie industry 30 years earlier. And that's the end of that chapter. Pretty fascinating. You know, and then now you have Kanye West and what he's dealing with, and Kyrie Irving, what he's dealing with. I'm trying to dig and find this articles here, but, you know, let's talk about this since we're on the kind of subject of religion. And I have this. This is on Israel 365 News. Jerusalem faith leaders signed Jerusalem climate declaration. Okay. Religious leaders from across the three monotheistic faiths signed the Jerusalem Climate Declaration last Thursday ahead of the United Nations COP27 Climate Conference, which kicks off Sunday in Sharm el-Sheikh. The initiative was spearheaded by the Department of World Religious Affairs of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in collaboration with the Interfaith Center for Sustainable Development, with an aim to encourage and empower religious communities in Israel and around the world to curb human-caused climate change. The State of Israel and the government ministries, including our ministry, consider the engagement with the climate issue to be of utmost importance and will work to continue this type of cooperation between civil, social, and religious parties for this common and critical goal. Rabbi Yonatan Nehru, founder and director of the Interfaith Center for Sustainable Development, said the climate crisis is a spiritual crisis, and therefore we need the world's religious leaders to address the problem. The climate crisis probably is a spiritual crisis because we're a bunch of jerks. And we're evil on the planet, and we're not, basically living up to any kind of religious principle anymore. The golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you type thing. The silver rule, don't do anything to others that you wouldn't want them to do to you. Let God control the climate. Let the Creator deal with that. You guys are sitting here blaming us as mankind. And how about you guys go after the jerks that are spraying all the chemicals out of these planes, huh? How about you guys go after the people, the cabal that's probably diverting the Mississippi River somewhere and drying the thing out? Mm-hmm. We will do everything to unite as many religious leaders as possible in the world to act on the climate issue. So you see, you've got the Abrahamic faiths. Allegedly, all sitting here ready to move us into this, let's just say, Agenda 2030 baloney, okay? So, Kyrie Irving, back to him, and this is up on Henry Macau. Black man fails to grovel properly before Jewish overlords. This is going to backfire spectacularly on organized Jewry as Kanye and Irving have millions of fans in the black community. Demon rats can kiss their behinds goodbye. So Kyrie suspended by the Nets for his insufficient apology for anti-Semitism. Israeli ambassador boasts he's been put in his place. So these Israelis... they're all sitting there. Hey, you got to do. They come over here. Hey, you got to do something about Kanye West. And then they're, oh, yeah, you got to do something about this basketball player. So he was suspended by the Brooklyn Nets for failing to apologize profusely enough for sharing a link to a quote unquote anti-Semitic documentary, even though he pledged to work with the ADL to fight hate and pay them $500,000 donation to get off his back a day ago. There's no room for anti-Semitism, racism, false narratives, or misguided attempts to create animosity and hate. Sam Zussman, chief executive officer of BSE Global, parent company of the Brooklyn Nets and Barclays Center, said one day earlier. NBA Commissioner Adam Silver. Now, if you look at this guy, he just looks like some freaking goon, something out of a freaking a bad cartoon. Kyrie Irving made a reckless decision to post a link to a film containing deeply offensive anti-Semitic material, blah, 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 right? So he's got to do six things to return to the team. Apologize and condemn the movie he promoted. $500,000 donation to anti-hate causes, sensitivity training, anti-Semitic training, meet with ADL and Jewish leaders, and meet with the coach, Joe Tsai, to demonstrate understanding. And one reader says, can't the dude just play basketball? All these people went to pedophile island are still in the entertainment business and have suffered no penalty at all. 77-year-old granny, thank God for these young men for speaking up for all of us Americans who won't. It's a right to say what they want. I, a 77-year-old grandmother, appreciate and admire these guys. I'm definitely a fan. The Jews overstepped their bounds, as did Kyrie's team owner, so forth and so on. So... Kanye, I'm starting to think the word anti-Semitic means the N-word. It's just so weird that this is going on right now. Brazil, there's so much here about, you know, there's so many people have these, let's just say, theories about, okay, that this was a setup and for the military to take over and so forth. And, you know, then the kind of people that are loyal to Trump are basically saying, yep, Trump and Bolsonaro, they ran the second biggest sting operation in history besides the one they ran for 2020. And it's about to be the midterms in, you know, 2 days. And the speculation out here about what's going to happen is just wild. Mr. Producer, let's get clip 12 ready. Now, this is floating around all over Before It's News and that sort of sector of the Q stuff. And I mean, the amount of the, I mean, you know, the whole, the number 11.3 that was big in the Q drops. And if you don't, if you never really followed it, I'm just trying to give you the boiled down version of this. But 11.3, and this all has to do with devolution, which means preemptively Trump gave the military power to basically run things behind the scenes and so forth. And while this installation of the resident happened, I mean, it's a real screwy, long drawn out kind of thing, but let's just listen to clip 12 and then we'll continue. Go ahead and roll that.
And so all of that being said, I'm excited to relay to all of you tonight that within the domestic territories of the United States, the governors and the state senior leadership groups are being contacted individually by the U.S. military, and they are being given need-to-know information only on why we are here, what happened in 2020 and over the last 2 years, samples of evidence that the military has, and probably much more that I'm not aware of. And they're also being given a vague need-to-know-only idea of where we are going next and why we have to go there. These meetings are being used also to give reassurance to states who have not been part and party to any of the operations going on over the last 2 years, be it for or ill. There are simply some states that, you know, they didn't commit any war crimes, but they also weren't pivotal in the election crime either. And so, or maybe they had individuals that the military couldn't verify at the time, you know, were able to be trusted and used as part of the plan. Though those states are being contacted, all U.S. states, and protectorates and senior leaders are being told a vague idea, a need-to-know-only idea of what happened, what's been going on, where we're going, and why we have to do it this way. For those states that have war criminals who have not yet been apprehended by the U.S. military, it is my understanding that these meetings are also being used to put them on notice, either directly with a summons in these meetings or told to expect a summons in very short order. And that is one of the reasons that we have seen such incredible military activity over the last 4 to 6 days. We are at a momentous time. We are at a time when essentially the miniature U.S. presidents in each sovereign state or commonwealth inside the U.S. or protectorate are being given information regarding everything that's happening. And I don't even know what to say. It's just a very exciting time.
Okay, so you can stop that there. But it's just like, you know, everybody's talking about 14 states activating National Guard preparations in place. And so people are speculating, okay, is this the riots and all these things were talked about and all these Q drops that people still are talking about to this day. Other people are speculating that Pelosi, this wing of the conspiracy, they're putting these people in place to solidify stolen elections, et cetera, et cetera. So the speculation's all over the place. There was footage floating around this week that Pelosi, you couldn't tell anything, but you can't see she's cuffed behind her back. And I mean, the speculation out here is so insane. Trying to navigate through it is tough. And, you know, you situation update, Gitmo Express, justice is coming as militaries prepare for the midterm elections. And you got all these people talking about, Pelosi arrested, blah, 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 civil war. Hal Turner's got up on his site, basically, bulletin, 10-foot wall put around the Federal Reserve Bank in Washington on Sunday. As shown in the photo above, a 10-foot wall was erected around the Federal Reserve Bank. What do you suppose is the knowledge they already have that makes them feel they will need this type of protection from the general public? Now, if you play some of these embedded videos over here on Before It's News, people from like Restored Republic and all these channels basically talking about in the next number of days that we're going on to a gold standard note and all of our dollars are going to be worthless. And, you know, they're telling everybody get their, you know, they're trying to start bank runs. This is very fascinating. I don't know where it's going to go, but we'll see you on the other side. When it comes down to living, Lord knows I'm living it up the best. He's the best, now he's the rest. I guess there is a road to nowhere, and that road it leads to me. If you're headed out to somewhere, nowhere's where you'll follow me. It's the day to you believe.
Road to nowhere! What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.